Good morning, Your Honors. My name for the record is Stanley Jackala, and I'm representing Frank Venecia and Leslie Venecia. In addressing this particular case, I'm going to view it from the standpoint of Judge Dara's ruling, where Judge Dara, in effect, considered the four-pronged test for determining if there is a sexual harassment case or a basis for one, and he addressed specifically the second prong, where he ruled, in effect, that he did not think, in his opinion, that the complaint that I had filed differentiated between the genders. In other words, he looked at it as a same-sex type case, or in other words, equal harasser under the Holman decision.
I mean, is it your basic point that the complaint itself says that these actions were taken on account of the respective sex of the two parties, and that that's all you need for a 12B6 motion? I mean, it's conceivable that one might not find something was on account of sex at a summary judgment stage, but are you making, in a sense, a procedural argument?
I'm not making so much a procedure argument. I think it's a substantive argument.
Seem to be arguing, if I'm understanding you correctly, that because sexual matters were the tool of harassment, you know, these pictures or, you know,
right,
all the things that were going on, that means the person is being harassed because he's a man or because she's a woman. And, you know, our cases suggest that maybe you need more than that. Maybe, if the person puts offensive pictures around, you know, that offend everybody in the workforce, male and female alike, they aren't really discriminating, in a sense, on the basis of one sex or against one sex or the other. See, because I guess at the root of this whole area of the law is, in fact, still the concept of discrimination. We
Correct.
Have no kind of sexual abuse federal law. We have a sexual discrimination federal law, and what we're looking for is how can one characterize what went on to these two people as a form of discrimination? Maybe you could address that.
Well, I looked at it from the standpoint of all the events that I enumerated in my complaint, specifically with Frank Venecia.
Right, but why was that treating him especially badly because he's a man, if I could put it that way?
Well, because some of the references relative to him indicated some type of involvement with his wife where he might not be considered the manly type or may be considered a different type of a man, a gay man. I think there were innuendos where he was being depicted not strictly as an employee from the standpoint of just kidding around, but I think because he was being singled out as a male. And I think it was a male gender type situation the way I viewed it because of the severity, the frequency and the severity of what went on. I mean, you're talking about a man's wife supposedly or allegedly having,
right,
what I'm saying,
right,
Judge.
Right. No, you,
and that to me seemingly was a basis for the complaint. And then when I read Judge Darrow's ruling and I looked at the Holman case and the way I view Judge Darrow's ruling is he said, in effect, well, I'm looking at it like the same people are involved in the harassing situation. In other words, in Holman, we had one supervisor, as this court is aware, that one supervisor picked on the husband, picked on the wife, so it was equal harassment. The way I viewed it was that there was one specific supervisor with reference to Frank Venecia, Mark Hannon, who was the prime mover in terms of harassing Frank, and Mark Hannon was no way involved with Leslie Venecia.
Counsel, why, and you may have a valid reason, I just may not see it.
Yes, Judge.
Why are these parties joined in this lawsuit? Why aren't there separate lawsuits?
Well, I joined them because I considered them, from the standpoint of expediency and economics and growing right at the case get-go, I looked at those cases together. I could have divided them, but if I had divided them, there would have been two different cases, two different cost factors. I thought I could do it more effectively by filing one lawsuit.
Well, I assume it may have something to do with the financial aspect.
It certainly did, Judge.
But if you'd done it that way, we might not be here.
Yeah, that may be true, too. I understand that. Fully understand that that's a possibility, but the court still could do something in that regard if it's so desired. But
so could you, because you could sever.
Pardon me?
So could you, if the result in this court was what you wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also sever, but
yeah,
then the problem would be solved if we were to rule for you, depending on what the ruling might be.
Right. Absolutely. Now, as far as the Pasqua case, I also looked at that from the standpoint that the case of Pasqua was strictly, I would say, rumor. It was obvious about a man and a woman, what supposedly went on. Here I think it's a little bit of a different case because of the nature of the allegations. So I thought that Pasqua would not be applicable either. So I did devote 5 minutes for my time, 5 minutes for rebuttal. That's why I'm watching the time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Dodge?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stephanie Dodge, and I represent the appellee Gottlieb Memorial Hospital in this case. First, as an initial matter, I'd like to address one of the issues that were raised, I think, by two of the judges here, and that is, the fact that this particular complaint was brought not just on behalf of Frank Venezia, but on behalf of Leslie and Frank Venezia. And I think that is the whole ballgame, if you will. If this had been pled just about Frank Venezia, it may have been a different situation.
But doesn't that, I mean, I thought you might say that, and it seems to me underlying that assumption is an idea about facts, which seems to be that any time somebody is harassing two people of different genders, it can't possibly be on account of their gender. But I'm not sure that that's such a, an absolute truth, even if on the facts of Holman that's the way things worked out. It'd be like saying a manager couldn't at the same time discriminate against African Americans and Hispanics, or, or the company at the full respondeat superior level couldn't have discriminatory practices that would affect both, in some instances men, in other instances women. And that strikes me as a matter of fact, and what bothers me the most about your position is really that it's a 12B6 motion, and you have to be saying they pleaded themselves out of court, but I'm not sure that they did. They've alleged it was on account of their gender.
Well, to get to that issue, first of all, I don't contend that it's an absolute truth that just because there was a male and female involved that a plaintiff could never allege a cause of action that would survive a motion to dismiss. But we need to look at the complaint that's before us here. And here the complaint is very specific, and it is specific in detailing events that occurred and in the plaintiffs at the time, now the appellants, both saying that the same set of conduct constituted both discrimination and harassment. This isn't
a type of situation. Some of it's the same and some of it isn't.
Well, yes, there's three actually groups of conduct. That's alleged, I'm sorry.
And you have different supervisors, which to me is a critical fact. Even though some of those facts overlap, there are differences in their different supervisors that they're reporting to.
Well, correct. But in regards to the actual the individuals that are alleged to have engaged in the harassing conduct that involved one supervisor and coworkers, and the appellant's counsel makes the argument that Holman should just be limited to a situation where it's a single supervisor. Holman didn't rest on the fact that it was a single supervisor, but that in fact the harassment was committed against people of opposite sexes.
But the thing is, in these facts, I'm looking at the complaint.
Right.
There are a lot of facts, which you note in your brief as well, that pertain only to Frank. There are maybe not quite as many facts that pertain to Leslie, and they are alleging that this course of harassment was done on account of the sex of the people, just like if there were terribly offensive racial actions being taken against somebody, even if there were other people of the same race in the workplace who weren't getting them, you would still have a claim on the part of the person who was being harassed on the basis of race.
And under the federal liberal requirements of notice pleading, the plaintiffs in the situation could have simply said that they were discriminated or harassed on the basis of their gender.
Exactly, but they didn't. Exactly, in this complaint, are you focusing on as the thing that indicates the equal opportunity harasser story?
Well, if you
look at a paragraph or a statement,
if you look at the part of the complaint that deals specifically with Leslie Venezia, when she goes on to
which paragraph?
Well, as an initial matter, the complaint itself is a little confusing, if you will. If you look at starting on page 9. Of the complaint, Ms. Venezia goes on to, if you look at 7E, 7F, 7G of her part of the complaint, specifically.
7E is about Frank.
Right, and
she,
that is
model.
The basis for her.
7F is about Frank. So why does that hurt Leslie's claim?
Well, Leslie, the only thing that she alleges other than those events that occurred because of Frank or occurred to Frank are that she that she suffered a comment by a coworker that was based upon her failure to terminate somebody else. That's clearly not because of her sex, and because her tires were slashed because she reported a $35 theft. That
which,
also
which
is
may
not
mean
because.
You know that I mean you could argue that the complaint states a claim vis-a-vis Frank and doesn't state a claim vis-a-vis Leslie. I mean there are other mm-hmm. ways altogether of looking at this.
Well, we would argue, looking at the actual complaint as it's written, that the only clear indication there is that both plaintiffs are alleging a similar set of facts to support both their harassment and discrimination charges. And under the Holman decision, that in and of itself evidences that that neither can show that the discrimination was based upon their respective sexes.
But count one, reading count one in context, paragraph 5 says, plaintiff is a male employee protected under Title VII. And then you go on through this long paragraph 7 where the word plaintiff has been defined as a male employee, right?
But if you go to page 9 of that same complaint, the exact same allegations are raised on behalf of Leslie Venezia. The format is exactly the same, and she attempts to bootstrap all of the allegations involving Frank Venezia to her own suit.
Yeah, but then even on this hiring of Jennifer Roth situation, where this Jim Klein demands the termination of Roth, you know, you have a situation where at least she's alleging when she refuses to terminate, he informs employees of the hospital that she sat on his lap in the presence of her husband for the purpose of demeaning her.
Correct, but in regards to those allegations that relate to her, there's nothing whatsoever. In fact, it's contradictory to the complaint to assume that it was because of her sex. She says
well,
it was clearly...
Well, what about this part G in her complaint? Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen instances like this before. If you put a photograph up depicting a nude female body and you write somebody's name under it, you know, women will point to that as an instance of sexual harassment in the workplace. It's a very disturbing thing for at least a lot of people to have that kind of material around. She's going to experience that a little differently from the way he will. Why does that not suggest, just to take that one example, that there's something in this complaint, remembering the Conley against Gibson standard, that could lead to a right to recover?
Because here both claimants are looking to the same set of conduct to form the basis of their particular claims.
Why?
And that's exactly
what you're trying to say, that can't be, right. Whereas... I don't know. I mean, I think that's an overreading.
That's what I'm troubled by, too. What authority do you have or case that you can cite to? Because I think this is distinguishable from Holman that the district court relied on. You know, what case do you have that says that you can't have common factual allegations?
Well, Holman actually involved a situation where later on in the case there was an attempt to argue that this could have been pled separately or individually, but it wasn't. And the court in that situation said, look, we're not going to think of what could have or should have happened. We're going to look at the complaint before us. And here, because
right, but that case didn't stand for the proposition you couldn't have common facts or there couldn't be some facts that are similar to support each allegation. That's my point. That's what I think, you seem to get a lot of comfort from that case, but just because these facts are duplicative doesn't mean you can't make a claim.
An employer cannot use the same set of conduct to harass against both a male and a female.
But it isn't total. It's not all. But if it was exclusively, if they were identical, but there are different paragraphs. There are some things that are common, but there are lots of other paragraphs in the complaint.
That is correct. However, the paragraphs that distinguish Leslie Venezia's case are clearly not because of sex. The vast majority of her complaint relies on that conduct, which also involved her husband, which goes against the very nature of a Title VII claim of showing that there must be some type of desperate treatment, some type of discrimination based upon sex. And here, the complaint is pled with such specificity that it's obvious from the complaint that the discrimination or harassment alleged could not be on the basis of Frank being a male or Leslie being a female. We would ask that you would uphold the decision of the district court.
Thank you, counsel.
Your honors, I have nothing further to add than what I did in my opening argument. I did listen to opposing counsel's argument on the court's questioning, and if the court has any questions of me, I'd attempt to answer. But I think the court's analysis and questioning has covered what I believe both briefs have tried to advance before this court in the way of arguments. I'm respectfully asking this court to reverse the decision of Judge Dara with reference to the dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move to